Much. Could I remind everybody to make sure your mobiles are switched off, and if we could keep disruption to a minimum, everyone would appreciate that. Thank you. Now, it gives me great pleasure, and we're very honoured to have a second speaker tonight, the fantastic Layla.
Thanks, David. I'm Layla. I'm an addict.
Hi.
It's really nice to be here.
You have to speak quite close to it. Yeah.
I'm Layla. I'm an addict. Thank you for asking me to do the chair. And yeah, I haven't done a chair here for a while. The last chair I'd done here was last year when I was 15 years, and this year I'm 16 years. So I was 16 years a couple of weeks ago. So. Really nice to be here, and there's so much that's happened in a year. It just goes really quickly as well. You just think, God, is that another year as well, you know, and things are so different to what they were last year as well, you know, and my mum's been in and out of hospital a lot this year, real lot, you know, since sort of October, so it's been quite sort of stressful. And I live in North London and the hospital's in Camberwell. So I've just sort of been backwards and forwards, and you know, and like what Ian was sharing, you know, thanks for your chair, Ian. It was lovely to listen to you as well, and what he was saying about the hepatitis. You know, I've just had some blood tests, and it doesn't look very good, you know, and they're not really that happy with the results. And they said, you know, so I've had to completely change my diet, really change it, like give up most things that I like, you know, everything that I like. Biscuits, birthday cakes, meat, dairy, caffeine, sugar, because I love sugar. I've always loved, you know, sugar. And when I was little, I remember when I was tiny, you know, when I was little, I was in a children's home and they used to have this pantry, and I always used to sneak into it, and I used to nick this food. And I never had to nick the food, but I just stole. It was my first thing that I did. I just used to nick food all the time. And when I was before then, I used to nick, when I was with my dad, I remember, you know, my dad used to take me down Rigby Market, and if I saw anything, I'd steal it, like, you know, and go into people's bags, and, you know, like, and I was at Hackney Juvenile Court at 10, you know, for stealing. And in the children's home, I just used to nick all this food and go upstairs to my bedroom and eat and eat and eat. And I used to go to sleep, but it used to knock me out, you know, and I just used to sleep. I think because I ate so much, you know, like when you eat certain foods like pasta and that, I just like to start falling asleep, you know. And later I found different things that made me fall asleep. So, we ended up in the children's home because my parents couldn't really cope with us. They couldn't look after us. They couldn't protect us from the things that Ian spoke about as well, the stuff that was going on at home. And it was quite difficult for them. And my dad was drinking, you know, and my mum couldn't cope. She didn't know, or she couldn't take care of us. She couldn't feed us properly. She couldn't wash up, you know, she never washed us regularly. We never went to school. And as a result, we was really, really neglected as children, really neglected, you know. And as a result, you know, we ended up all together in the children's home. And when we arrived at the children's home, my brothers and sisters, in a way, sort of adapted to it better than I did. I couldn't really cope with it. I didn't want to be there. I was just full of rage. I was sort of 10, 11, and I was just so angry. I remember just, as soon as I got there, the first day I got there, I smashed a window because it was on a beach. And I remember looking out and see, and this beach had all pebble stones. And I'd come from like sort of Stoke Newington and ended up in a little village in Lancing. And I thought, what the fuck? You know, and I looked out and I remember just picking up this stone and just throwing it. And I remember these windows just smashing, you know, and they thought, you know, and at school I was really destructive. I never settled into school. I kept running away all the time, you know, always just running and running, you know, all through the children's, no matter how many times I was brought back by the foster parent, I'd go again, no matter how many times she used to come up to London, she used to come up and collect me from lock-up units, you know, like Camberwell Lodge, you know, Cumberlow Lodge. I remember Middlesex Lodge, like young offenders, you know, lock-ups, and she'd just come to police stations, you know, and And I was so little as well, tight, you know, little as well, as in physically I was little as well, so I really sort of stood out, you know, if I sort of wandered around the streets and ended up like around the West End, I just used to always sort of magnify, you know, it was like a magnet. I remember like, you know, being on the bus, you know, and sort of going around Piccadilly Circus and, you know, looking at that sort of Coca-Cola advert and thinking, oh, wow, you know, and the cabs and everything, just those lights, you know, and those bright lights, you know, and thinking, oh, you know, and I just used to jump off buses and just end up anywhere, as long as, you know, I didn't really care where I ended up, you know, and someone is actually sitting in this meeting that met me when I was 13, and I'd run away from the children's home, and she'd also run away from the home as well, from her parents, and she just sort of took me under her wing. And I remember her sort of taking me to this flat in King's Cross in Yorkway and looking after me and taking care of me. And at the time, she's actually from Scotland, but she took me to her parents that lived in Leeds. And we both arrived in Leeds. And I remember arriving in Bradford, you know, and we arrived in Bradford and, you know, and thinking, what the fuck are we doing in Bradford? And Leeds as well, you know, and just, you know, and we came, somehow, I don't know what happened, but we just ended up splitting up, just not seeing each other again. And it was really weird, because I was 13, I don't know how old she was, or she is, but we ended up, I came into recovery, and then a couple of years ago, I saw her in an NA meeting, thinking, oh my, you know, and it was just like really strange, because we'd gone separate paths, but that we were brought back together in the fellowship. You know, and it's really nice to see her in recovery, because we had no idea of the paths that we led, you know. We just knew that, you know, we never revealed much. I never sort of said to her this had happened or I'd come from this or anything like that. But, you know, it was just so nice to see her in recovery, you know. It's just nice to see anyone in recovery, you know, getting clean and, you know, having a different life, you know. And I just carried on, you know, and I remember just being attracted to that way of life, just sort of wandering around that West End and in and out those subways and, you know, watching people injecting into themselves, you know, and just looking at them. And I remember just staring at people, you know, just sort of being fascinated when they put a needle in their arm, you know, and then watching their sort of expression on their faces, thinking, oh, wow, you know, like, that just looks so nice, you know, whatever they're doing or whatever they're taking, it just looks really nice. And I remember just wanting that, you know, and ending up taking tablets, you know, and sort of, yeah, just taking tablets and going to nightclubs and, you know, it was just like in the West End. And I remember I shared it before, and I remember this guy used to work at a nightclub, his name was Baby. And he used to sit on a door in the Waldorf Mews. And as you walked in, he'd put tablets in your mouth. And you just, and I know what they are, a tuna. Well, I didn't know what they were at the time. They were fucking tuna. And you woke up the next day, you know, like, thank God he's still in the same club. But, you know, but it was just like, it was quite sort of, it was not, you know, when I look back, I just think it was quite sort of sad in a way, you know. It's not like I should have been at home wrapped up, you know, having bedtime stories read to me. But, you know, it's not what 13 or 14-year-olds do, you know. It was quite sort of tragic, you know, and sad. You know, whenever I see kids or that wandering around on the streets, I always think I get frightened for them. I really do. And that's why I like places like this, because they bring in the sort of the vulnerable. They open it up at night time and they take in people that are really at risk out on the streets, you know, and they offer them a bed and they feed them and things like that. And there wasn't really much that was available when I was younger, you know. It was, you just ended up with people that sort of abused you more, that just took advantage of you, you know. There was periods where I was lucky to be alive, you know, being taken to places where I was raped, kept hostage, you know, by a few guys, you know. And that was really young, you know, 14, 15, and just lucky to be let go of, really, you know. I meant, and yeah, it was just, when I think back at that, and I just think, God, you know. And I just carried on. It never stopped me, though, no matter what happened to me, you know. It never stopped me doing what I was doing. It never stopped me from, you know, stealing. It never stopped me from prostituting. It never stopped me from going into prison. It never stopped me from using, you know. And it just sort of deteriorated, you know. I sort of deteriorated physically, You know, the drugs progressed even more. You know, I just got worse and worse and worse. You know, if I went into prison, I'd come out and... Do you want to keep an eye on the time, Dave? Yeah. And I was 17, you know, when I was 17, I was on the mother and baby wing in Holloway. You know, I had my son, you know, in outside hospital. I came back, I went back to the children's home, you know, and then I ended up, you know, when I was in the children's home, I used to come back up to London with him, book into hotels overnight, you know, make some money, go and score, use on the train on the way back to the children's home, you know, with my son in the, you know, there was periods where he was in a buggy outside toilets, you know, where I was trying to get a hit inside, you know, and no awareness of what I was doing or who I was affected. I wasn't really aware of any of that, you know, and my son sort of was neglected, you know. I used to end up in, you know, I know they're sort of called crack houses now, but they were called shooting galleries when I was using. I'm not that old, but I'm 45. But the thing is, it was just such a long time ago. It just seemed such a long time ago because my son's 27 next month, you know, and he was a baby. He was a couple of years old, and the first 2 years of his life, you know, was spent in shooting galleries and hotels and, you know, toilets, you know, outside toilets, you know, and he didn't understand. I didn't even know what season it was, you know, because I knew that, because I didn't know how to dress it. You know, I didn't know that, you know, I had no awareness that you dress someone in the winter with warmer clothes. I just thought it was the same. Everything just seemed the same. Nothing sort of changed at all, you know, and everything was the same every day, getting up, you know, waking up sick, having to, you know, go and get some money, working while you're sick, you know, getting nicked for shoplifting or, you know, prostituting, you know, ended up in a cell, you know, with my son, you know, then in going back into, you know, with foster parents, you know, and then eventually then finding him permanent foster parents, you know, and then me, you know, just carried on using again, you know, and I was 23 years old and, you know, I could hardly walk properly. I remember sort of, because I was going in my legs by then, and I was slowly going towards my groin, and I was thinking, oh, you know, and then I got nicked. I remember just getting nicked, and I've been nicked so many times, and I've done quite a few prison sentences and psychiatric. I've been in quite a lot of institutions. Most of, if I wasn't in an institution, I was on the street, and it wasn't really that long. And I remember ending up in prison again and thinking, you know, I just don't want to spend... I remember just sitting in a dormitory and thinking, I'm almost 24 years old, and I've never really thought about my life, never really looked back at my life and thought, what have I done with myself? What's, you know, I wanted my son back. I wanted, you know, I wanted maybe to stop using or go to college or, you know, have a different life, you know. And I remember sitting in my dormitory with all the other women, and there's women in there that were like, you know, the same age as my mum, you know, that had been in and out of prison most of their lives, you know. And I thought, I don't really want this. I don't want to be in and out of prison the rest of my life. I really don't, you know. I don't want to end up with like a lot of the people that I used to use with. Not, I'm not putting them down in any way, but the people I used with, they were a lot older than me. They'd gone on a lot longer than me. They'd destroyed a lot more. You know, these people were getting married, and, you know, I just had the one son. They mostly had a family. They mostly had a career. They mostly had a wife, you know, whatever. You know, they'd lost all businesses. They'd lost, you know, I felt that, you know, they'd lost a lot more, you know, and I didn't want to carry on using. I really didn't. And I remember just sitting there thinking, you know, I didn't even want to go to court the next day because I had that fear of them letting me out. I thought, if they let me out, I'm going to get nicked again, and I'm just going to end up back in prison. If I go out with that bit of money, what I used to do, I used to have this plan. When I get out, I'm going to go and sort myself out. I'm going to go and do this. I'm going to try and get Ashley back. That's my son's name. And I'm going to try and sort myself out. But every time I used to walk out with that bit of money, I used to go and score. And I didn't want to walk out again because I just thought, I'm just going to go and score again. I'm just going to go and use. And then I didn't, you know, when I got to court, I was with my probation officer. I left the court, I was given probation again. And I remember walking to court, you know, and this guy from the fellowship was doing voluntary work. He used to hang out by the probation service. and he's called Grateful Robert, and he used to talk to people that had come through probation, and he started talking to me, you know, and he said to me, you know, I'm going to come and pick you up from your hostel. I was living in Greek Street, and I'm going to take you to an NA meeting. And I remember him talking and talking and talking. All I was thinking, I'd be fucking shuts up. Because my probation service was in Rathbone Place, and the hostel was in Greek Street, and I just wanted to go and get a couple of hands. So I just thought, how do I get rid of him? And I knew how I got rid of him, because the hostel never let any blokes in. Well, they did if they came through the back door, and, you know, that's the way you got them in, but he didn't come in, you know, and he just said to me, I'll come back later on, and I'll come pick you up, and I'll take you to a meeting. And I said, all right, then. And he did. He came at 6:30. He came and picked me up, took me to my meeting, and I went in the toilets, had a hit, and I come in, and I don't remember anything after that. And I just remember going to meetings. That's all I remember, going to meetings, stoned, and I was using, carried on using for over a year. I just kept going to meetings. I met a lot of people in this, Wendy I met, she was one of the ones. We still go to meetings together, you know, and that was really, it was quite fun then. It was, and I was using, but the thing was, no matter how many times I used and how much I was using, and, you know, and I should go in the toilet, have a hit, come out, and someone next to me used to tap me on the leg and go, you know, the meeting's finished now. And I didn't know where I was, you know, when you come round, and they used to go to, we all go for coffee now. And I go, all right. And I just used to follow people. And that's all I did for about a year, over a year, I just followed people. And people just said to me, you know, you just keep coming back, just keep coming back. You know, and I don't know what I was coming back for, but I felt really welcomed. I think that's what I felt. I didn't want to be on the streets, you know, I didn't want to be out there. I didn't want to be in prison. I didn't want to be in a psychiatric hospital. I didn't want to be in a lockup unit. You know, I just felt so safe. I was really taken care of. I was really carried in the fellowship. Really, really carried. You know, I was reached out. People just held their hand out, I remember. And I just took it, you know, and you're just sort of taken care of. And, you know, and I just carried on going to meetings, no matter, you know, what I looked like, it didn't matter. I didn't, you know, I looked around the fellowship and there was people getting their lives together, there was people getting into relationships, there was people getting careers, there were people going to college, you know, there were people getting their kids back, you know, and I tried to get my son back, you know, and I tried access, I tried to get contact, and they just wouldn't have it, you know, and eventually my son was adopted, you know, and I never saw him for 20 years. You know, until quite recently, the last couple of years, I do have contact with him now. You know, that was really amazing to see him and meet him. You know, and I eventually got clean, you know, and I'd get periods of clean time, then I'd relapse. The first sort of 7 years was a real difficult time for me, and I couldn't get clean. I'd get periods of clean time, and then I'd use again, and then I'd get clean again, and then I'd use again. But I haven't used now for, you know, over 16 years, nearly, you know, 16 years in 2 weeks, so that is fantastic. You know, but the 16 years have been amazing, really. I've still got the same sponsor, you know, and like what Ian talked about, you know, when he talked about recovery and the steps, you know, and, you know, I have worked the steps. I do work the steps. I do go to meetings regularly. I've always stayed in the middle of Narcotics Anonymous. I've always done service in the fellowship. You know, I just think it's really important, you know, to do that, you know, and I actually like service. It's never bothered me. I'm happy, you know. I love giving back what was given to me, you know, because I just think if no one was here when I came in, you know, I wouldn't have got it. That's why I think it's important that I stay around, you know, and give back what was given to me, because it was given so freely, and my sponsor's always been there for me. I've got the same sponsor. I've had the same sponsor for over 20 years. And she's guided me through the steps. I never really knew how to share when I first came into the fellowship. I didn't know what was going on. I didn't know what emotions were. So I didn't know what feelings were. I've never sort of, I felt anything when I was using. I think I just sort of felt sick, really. So, you know, I'd wake up and I just used to wake up withdrawing, and I felt sick. And towards the end of my using, I sort of felt sort of tired and exhausted, you know. And so when I sort of came into the fellowship, and I think by doing the steps, you know, I got in touch with myself and I learned how to feel things. And I remember, you know, I remember once I rang my sponsor up. I was a couple of years clean this time, and I was crying and crying and crying. I remember I couldn't stop crying. And I said, I keep crying and crying. She said to me, oh, Layla, you're just sad. And I went, oh. And I didn't know that I was sad. I really didn't know what a feeling was, you know. Or, you know, I felt confused. I felt frightened. I felt I've been resentful in recovery. I've been really angry, you know. I've been judgmental, you know, really, really. I've slagged people off, you know, really judged people, you know. But I've always been loved, you know, and I've been intolerant. I've been quite rude to people, you know. But people have just said to me, you know, just keep coming back. You know, no matter how I felt, I've always felt safe in NA, really safe. I just felt safe to be able to communicate. I've always been able to get on the phone to my sponsor. She's always been there for me. She's always listened to me. She's always supported me, you know, in times when it's been really quite difficult. You know, I mean, I've been in a relationship that I've been with. We've been together for nearly 12 years. You know, we got engaged last year, you know. And we tried to have children. He can't have children. And I went through a lot of medical stuff a few years ago. I had to inject into my stomach every day for months, you know. And that was really, really difficult. I've watched people in the fellowship get their kids back, you know, and I sponsor women and I encourage them to get their children back, and they've got their children back, you know. And it's been hard sometimes, when, you know, because I haven't got my, you know, I didn't get my son back, and it was really painful, you know. I never watched my son grow up. I never put on his first school uniform. When I met him a couple of years ago at Russell Square Tube Station, I didn't know what he looked like, you know. I didn't know his height or anything, you know. I just thought I shared it before, you know, I thought I was going to meet someone in a buggy, you know, because that's the image I had, and that was the memory I had of him, you know. And he wasn't, he just sort of appeared, you know, just like this 6 foot tall man, just sort of fell in my arms, you know. And I had to get to know him. I didn't know if he took sugar. I didn't know what he liked for breakfast, you know, because he comes and stays with me. He was with me last week when, a couple of weeks ago when I was celebrating my birthday. He's really proud of me. You know, he's very lost at the moment. He uses a lot, you know, he puffs all the time, and he says to me, Mum, it ain't a drug. It ain't a drug, it's a herb. And I go, all right, Ashley, you know. And he goes, don't you like the smell? And I go, no, I don't like it. Because he doesn't smoke in front of me, he doesn't use, he doesn't drink, he's really respectful. You know, and he's just really lost at the moment, you know. And he was there when I graduated last year at university. I got into one of the top universities in London. Well, it is the top university in London, you know. And I walked down Westminster with a hat and a gown on, and he held one hand and my sponsor held my other hand, you know. And it was just so lovely. My boyfriend was there, my sponsor was there, my son was there. And if you had told me 16 years ago that that was going to happen, I'd never have believed you, because 16 years ago was when my son was adopted, you know. And you know, and it's just amazing, really, you know. It's really a recovery. I never thought that you got clean. I never really met anyone that got clean, never. I never thought that people got clean. I never thought that people ever stopped using. I just thought we all died, you know, because I'd watched people die, you know, and I've seen people dead, you know. And a lot of my friends have died through using, and it's really just really sad, you know. Not many people make it. I don't know why I'm in recovery and all the people that I use with aren't in recovery. I really don't understand that at all, you know, but I really value what I've got. I really do appreciate my life, you know, and it is an amazing journey, you know. And I do get scared. I get, you know, because I'm co-infected. I have the HIV virus as well. So that is really quite scary. And sometimes I wake up and I think, oh, for fuck. I just like a day off sometimes. You know, when you wake up and you don't wake up, HIV and hepatitis C, and then you've got the illness on top of it, you know, so you wake up and you think, oh, fucking hell, you know. And I'll just reach for today and just remind, you know, and just do the best I can, really. You know, I just do the best, you know. I just do what I have to do. I do what I need to do. I get up and I pray. I do my Just For Today reading, I go to a meeting, I share, I do all the things that I need to do to stay clean, you know, because I want to stay clean. I do have a fantastic life. I don't mean materially, you know, I haven't got huge amounts of money in the bank. I don't drive a flash car. I don't live in a great big house. I've still got the same flat as I had when I came out of, well, not when I came out of prison. I went into temporary accommodation. I still live in the same flat, you know, and I was looking around my kitchen the other day and I was thinking, you know, I came in 22 years ago, I've still got the same sieve. And I was like, you know, like certain things you remember, like the garlic crusher and things like, because I was walking around John Lewis and I was thinking, oh, look, that's nice, different. I was thinking of buying some new stuff, but it's not been an obsession. I've never felt the need to, you know, to have material things. I've always just always been contented, really, and happy because of where I've come from. And I come from such extreme poverty that we never had anything, you know. We nearly died of malnutrition when we were younger. You know, there was times when there was no gas, there was no electric, there was no food, you know, that we had to pick food off the Dan Wrigley market, we had to steal food. And so everything that I have, I really do appreciate and value, you know. So everything that I get in recovery, such a joy and such, you know, such like, it's just, you know, when the things that happen to me, I really sort of think, oh my God, you know. When I remember just going on holiday in recovery and going to countries that I've never, you know, because I used to walk up and down Tottenham Court Road and up and down Earls Court Road and Bayswater Road up Queensway and King's Cross. I don't know how many times I walked around that fucking Argyle Square when I was about 16, 17. And just, you know, when, and just that when you've come from that and then you get on a plane and you lag, you know. I've been to my dad's country, like India, and I've been to Thailand and with my boyfriend, and I've travelled all around Europe. You know, I never even had a travel pass when I was using. You know, to come into recovery and be, you know, go to conventions on the other side of the world, you know, and it just blows me away, really, just like think, oh, wow, you know, you've got a fantastic life. You know, a real, you know, it just sort of, and you know, and when I look back at my life and I think where I've come from and what I've achieved and what I've done with my life, you know, I feel really proud of myself, really, really proud that, you know, I've done this, you know, with the help of the fellowship, because if it weren't for Narcotics Anonymous, I wouldn't have the life that I have now. I never had a life before I came in here, you know, and I have, you know, I have a life now, you know, that is beyond me, you know. The thing that I was promised when I came in, I was promised freedom from active addiction, and I've got so much more now, you know. And I know that in recovery I've gone through some difficult times and real painful times, but you know, I'm not exempt from pain, you know. I'm not exempt from difficult things in life, you know, because, you know, if I do the steps really quickly, then I'm not going to feel anything, you know. And that's what I thought, and it didn't work, you know. It didn't work at all. And I thought, if I do a lot of service and run around and do things, you know, I'm just not going to feel anything, you know. But I do feel things, you know. I'm a human being, you know. And I didn't feel anything when I was using. And it's not going to kill me. I used to think that if I felt anything, it was just going to be so overwhelming that it was going to destroy me, that I, because I used to always use, whenever I felt anything, I used to think, fuck this, I'm off, I'm going. Whereas, you know, and I used to run, you know, and even in recovery, you know, the first sort of 7 years in recovery when I came in, I remember not being able to cope with certain things. If I got a feeling, I never knew how to express it. I never sort of had that ability to go up to someone and say, this is, you know, when someone used to say to me, how are you, Layla? I go, oh, I'm all right, I'm all right, I'm all right. And that's all I'd say, I'm all right, I'm all right, yeah, I'm all right. And then I'd go down King's Cross and get a bit of gear. You know, I never used to say to someone, oh, I feel like using, I feel this or I feel that. I used to leave it till it got to the point where I'd end up using. And I know now that I don't have to use, I do not have to use, you know. I can come to a meeting or I can get on the phone and I can talk to someone and I can say, this is how I feel, you know. And it was difficult last night. My boyfriend's flat got burgled last night, and I remember going in, they've kicked off the door, but they never nicked nothing. But because there was nothing, you know, because I think they were disturbed because they'd done some of the other flats as well. And, you know, it was quite a bit of a shock, really, because I remember I used to burgle places all the time, you know. I used to Lloyd all the time. It was, you know, Lloyding, so you get a bit of plastic, and we used to open doors with them. And I remember thinking, and I wasn't there this morning because the police came and forensic, and I thought, because it was in Earls Court or Chelsea Police Station, I thought, oh God, I said, Chris, you don't mind if I don't come, do you? Because I've got like 49 convictions, and I thought, if I don't really want to sort of them to sort of ask me questions and things. So I still get paranoid around the police. I just still get a bit scared and thinking, you know, are they going to arrest me or something? Because there's a lot of crimes that I never got caught for. You know, and I remember when I did my step eight, and I thought to myself, oh my God, I hope my sponsor don't think I'm going to walk up and down Oxford Street, go in and out of every bank and shop, you know. And I remember thinking, I got quite scared. I remember feeling quite scared. And I remember, I said, when I did my step eight, and I was with her, I remember putting my son, I said, what do I do about my son? And she goes to me, you go on a contact register so that he can, when he comes and looks for you, he can come and find you. And I said, what do I do about all the banks and the houses and the stealing? And she said to me, we just don't do it anymore. I thought, oh, what a fucking result. You know, because I thought, oh, this is brilliant, you know, because I thought she was going to have me going in and out of every bank, every department store, you know, and paying back all this money that I've stolen and all the money I've stolen from the children's home. And I didn't, you know, she just got me to, you know, donate a bit of money to a favourite charity of mine. Whenever I go away, I always spend a bit of money and buy things for the children out there, and I do it quite regularly. You know, I don't take, you know, I used to just take from people. I steal from people. I took, you know, all through my using, I just ripped people off. I didn't care about anyone. I let people down, you know, and I don't do that anymore. I'm there. I'm consistent. I listen to people, you know. I don't let people down. I don't steal from people. You know, I've got quite a lot of responsibility because I, you know, I work with my sponsor sometimes, and she works with, you know, she works with people that, you know, earn a lot of money. You know, and I have to go and deposit checks. And I thought to myself, she knows nothing. You know, of course she knows about me, but if she, I just think, God, if she, you know, over 20 years ago, you know, to be trusted like that, you know, to go into a bank and deposit money and withdraw and get PIN numbers of people, you know, that you work for and be trusted with checks and money. Do you imagine having that when you're using? Do you know what I mean? I was just fucking, I remember just finding wallets with PIN numbers and thinking, fucking hell, what a result, you know. And now I'm the opposite, you know. Now if I find anything, or if I was in the supermarket the other day, you know, and I was given too much change, and it was quite a lot, you know, and I said to the bloke, are you giving me too much? And just the fear on his face, I thought, oh, and he really did appreciate it, because I thought that might have come out of his wages. It's not something that I was doing really acting smart, or, you know, what have I done? I've been really good. But, you know, that might have been taken out of his wages. And it's just nice just to consider other people, because I never really thought of other people. I never thought of any consequences that my actions might have on people. You know, I just didn't care. You know, and the more kinder you were, the more I took advantage of you. You know, the more, you know, and I just took, you know. And if I didn't, you know, I remember I was really close to this girl in the children's home I was with, you know, she'd been adopted. You know, and I remember she had to go and meet her mum when she was 18, and she asked me if I'd come with her. And I was 16 at the time, and I remember letting her down, and she had to go and meet her mum, and her mum was pissed, really drunk. And I remember the pain on her face and thinking, you know, and I remember when she looked, she helped me when I first had my son, and she used to come and live with me, and she looked, helped me look after my son. And I remember stealing money from her, and she only worked at a department store, and I just stole from her. And I remember she was on my step eight list, and I remember getting in contact with her, and she put the, you know, and she didn't want to know. And some people don't want to know, you know, because I got clean. It doesn't mean I can go around knocking on people's doors and sending them lovely letters, you know, saying, oh, you know, by the way, I'm in recovery, because some people move on in recovery, you know, well, in life, you know. There's people that I've let down, you know, stolen from, you know, and I think they're just happy that I'm not fucking anywhere near them, you know. I think that's the amends that I make, you know, because sometimes you can cause more harm, you know. And my sponsor said, you know, some people, they won't just open their arms up and feel compassion and warm, you know. Some people just don't want to know, you know. But a lot of the amends I made, you know, and, you know, and And it is really nice, you know, the programme gives us lots of freedom, you know, and I've been so free and so blessed, really, you know, and I don't want to go on because I've got 5 more minutes left, you know, but I just want to say thanks for listening to me, and it's really nice to be here. Thanks.